You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome back to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
And this is the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed.
I thought you weren't going to say it, and I was really sad.
This week, we are talking about The Stepfather.
Is it The Stepfather? Or is
the
it...
Stepfather.
Okay, that makes sense.
I wonder if the remake is called just Stepfather. Surely the remake's called The Stepfather.
No, they probably dropped the.
Yeah, oh, that's how you know it's a different movie, when you drop the. Yeah, that movie came out around the time that like Prom Night got remade, and they dropped the from that as well. anyway, we are talking about...
Did the original Prom Night, was that one called The Prom Night?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, I was like, ew.
Yeah, so this is maybe the most gruesome momcore horror movie. It was originally marketed as a thriller, which it kind of is.
Yeah, this feels like something I would watch on the Women's Network at 8 p.m.
Absolutely.
Premiering Friday night because you know you're not going out.
Uh-huh. Nobody was really impressed by it, though, so they re-put it out as, like, the marketing. I mean, like, they retooled it as a slasher movie, and it got a little bit more of a response.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the problem is it's not quite a slasher movie, but it is a great, dark, psychological thriller.
It has that made-for-TV vibe about it, and uh-huh. Maybe because it does feel momcore, but that's quickly, like, dashed as soon as we get the full reveal in the opening scene.
Oh, yeah.
You're just like, whoa, they're not fucking playing around here!
We have an entire family annihilated.
Just a complete massacre, and it's such
blood
a silent...
everywhere.
Oh, such a silent horror. It feels like we've opened a room in The Shining that we weren't supposed to.
Yeah!
And there's like a dead kid on the floor.
There's
like, they
dead
are not
children
fucking around.
And I think it's that reason in particular that Roger Ebert hated it, which is a surprise.
Let's just not talk about him anymore because he doesn't like.
It disappoints you, right? Because he had such good taste in movies. But as soon as there was a hint of violence, he was like, oh, they're nothing but violence. These movies, oh, all they care about is violence, which is essentially his review for this movie, even though it's not very violent.
No, I guess not really.
It's very deliberate with how it uses violence, I would say.
Yeah, it's bookended by violence. Yeah. Like, you see the end of one saga with the stepfather, and then you see the conclusion of another at the end of the film, and that's really it in terms of the visceral horror.
Oh, we got a great kill with a 2x4 halfway through. What are you talking
about?
That's true. Just when you were starting to get a little bored,
not,
if you were a slasher fan, you're like, ooh, shit, 2x4 kill.
I would not call it a slasher.
No.
That said, Jerry, we need to talk about Jerry.
Yeah, Jerry.
For the whole 40 minutes, obviously.
He's the title character, yeah.
Do you know the actor's name?
His name is Terry O'Quinn.
Okay, so he's, like, fucking made for this movie.
He's incredible.
He has, like, I've never been one to be like, oh, they have star power. they have it. They have the zhuzh. They have whatever it is. He has whatever it is.
Yeah, Terry O'Quinn's great. He's in a million movies. Everybody remembers him as, I don't know the character's
name. The stepfather?
Name.
Because it should be this and this alone.
I was going to say the bald guy from the show Lost.
That's
I didn't watch
mean.
Lost. I have no idea. He's bald!
Oh, he's in Lost?
Yeah, he's the bald guy in Lost. It's all coming together now.
Okay.
See, for me, as a kid, I was obsessed with him in Tombstone and in The Rocketeer, Silver Bullet.
Well, forget all of those because
okay.
Your favorite
forget
movie...
Forget Silver Bullet, guys.
Your favorite movie now is The Stepfather because yeah. Jerry O'Quinn is eating this movie up.
Amazing, right? Like, he's... Even in The Stepfather 2, which we watched with The Fiend Club, a great Friday
bonkers,
night movie.
You
got it. Check
both
it out.
Both of these great Fiend Club movies.
He is just... given an A-plus performance where it doesn't necessarily need it. Without Terry O'Quinn, this is a boring made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, without him, it's not a character study. He
no.
is Hannibal Lecter in this movie.
Yeah!
Like, he's fucking going. Was it written for him? I feel like it had to have been.
It wasn't.
If not, serendipitous as fuck.
They tried giving this role to a bunch of... It says name actors. They tried offering it to
Jack
name
Nicholson.
Actors. Maybe. That would have been fun. But everybody turned it down. And they... like even the studio or whoever was backing the movie wanted a name for that role, of course.
I mean, it's pretty irredeemable.
From the get-go.
He kills a fucking kid in the beginning and he's like, the phone's off the hook.
Oh man, I love that. When he's opening shot of the movie, we see he is covered in blood. It is just him cleaning up after
Jerry
a crime
Jerry really
scene.
Likes a bathroom.
He loves a bathroom. But he's also just cleaning up the smallest little shit, like, ugh, these toys are misplaced, and he's putting away the kids' toys.
And you almost forget that you met him covered in blood, because he's become another person. He's got a new disguise on, and we're like, what the fuck's going on with Jerry? And then that's when we discover his massacre. He goes downstairs in a Silent House, and it opens up to the living room, and it's just like a fucking shit show down there.
Yeah, somebody has let off a fire hose of blood. Pretty much.
Yeah. And there's like blood smears on the stairs going up. Like you can see there was a scene. There was a struggle.
Uh-huh.
And it's all quiet now. We're just in the aftermath and we're with this guy who has absolutely no emotional connection to whatever the fuck just happened downstairs.
Yeah.
That blood is probably still warm.
Uh-huh.
Crazy.
He walks out whistling, strolling down this idyllic neighborhood. It looks gorgeous. And he's just like, la-di-da, off to have another family. The crazy thing about him is he is such an interesting serial killer character for a lot of different reasons. And it's obviously all Terry Gilquin. But I think when you assume what the movie's about, it's, oh, this guy is just a serial killer and he hides in families. That is not the case at all.
I think it's something completely reverse of that.
I think so.
I think he's trying not to murder his family.
I think so, yeah. And then, I mean, you could argue that
up to a point.
Most serial killers have to just, like, oh, I had to do it. There was no other choice. Like,
or they create some kind of external entity that's goading them into it. Like, they have a voice, or there's a character, or there's another persona.
His voice is telling him to keep this family together.
He's definitely got rage-a-hall, and he definitely lets that rage-a-hall out in the basement a lot.
So good. Like a real dad.
But he's venting that steam so he doesn't pick up a knife and fucking stab the whole party.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think what he has, and I guess like you were saying, you can kind of argue this for any and all serial killers that they're trying, well, for the most part. Sometimes.
They're all very unique.
At least in the beginning, trying not to be serial killers. I think he's just got, like, really bad OCD.
Oh, you think that's it?
Like, family-related OCD that is distressing to the point of committing murders.
That's funny, because I think the second movie really drives home what I'm going to say here, because the second movie is just a little more camp. But I think he has a very specific kink, and that kink is
OCD kink. Like, what's to say? Some people are just particular.
That kink is sweaters, whistling Dixie, and keeping the family together.
2.5 bedrooms.
Yeah, exactly. It is essentially like the nuclear family, the ideal family.
The thing that kept fucking me up the whole time was we flash forward a year later and Jerry is now Jerry. He had a different name with his old family.
Yep.
And he is already in the throes of a new relationship. I think they're already married.
They're already married.
Because the mom in this one, this family, Susan, is already calling him like your stepfather to Stephanie. And so we are just transported into this new family and he's in a comfortability like he's been there the entire time. Like
he's 50 years,
very much parenting her, talking to his daughter like she's been his daughter all along. And she's like, yo, buddy, my dad died a year ago and you just got here.
Yes.
The thing that bugged me the most the entire film that was just kind of like gritting my gears was he was using the dad's shit.
Oh, yeah.
There's 100% he showed up with nothing.
Of course.
And there's a full, like, tool set downstairs. There's a whole workbench. And I'm like, these aren't yours.
Yeah. It's weird how that's the thing that gets you. Like, you son of a bitch.
I don't care that you took his family, but you're using his tools in his own house?
Sure, sleep in his bed, but stay away from that bandsaw, you son of a bitch.
That cake isn't for you.
I know exactly what you mean. It's crazy to just, like, walk in and take over. Like, it's always yours. But that's what he wants,
it's
you
like
know?
The reverse of that weird bird that
The cuckoo bird.
Yeah, that lays its eggs in another bird's nest and makes that mom raise it. Yeah, He pushes everybody out so he can raise an egg that's not his.
Uh-huh.
He, Sparta kicks the dad bird out. Do you think he kills the dad?
No, I don't think so. Not at all.
I feel like that would be better.
I mean, that would be interesting.
It would be more particular in his choosing of a family, because he does a lot of like walking down the street and seeing like a little girl play on the lawn and like a loving family, and he's like, I like that.
So, but that scene comes later in the movie, and that's when he's sort of upset that he's lost his family.
Yeah, but...
like, he's wistful and hopeful to have it again.
To wait for a widow to come along that's got, like, the perfect, you know, nuclear family sans father, I guess he's transforming to be whatever would fit in that world.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you're very particular with how you like your family, so don't you think you could just, like... open your pool up by murdering.
So, but that's why it, that's what I think makes him so interesting. It's not that he is just a serial killer who's moving from town to town and is trying to be the polite guy in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I guess he is actually trying to complete broken families.
That's exactly what he's doing. I don't even know if it's that he's trying to complete it. It's that he wants it, and in a weird way, because he's also got no problem bailing out on it and killing it once he has it. But that's what he's after. He is looking to just insert himself into something that he had no effort in creating.
Yeah.
And wants to have that ideal American family.
Yeah. Which is kind of weird in a way, because a lot of the nuclear family is having your own kids, like having something that's biologically yours.
Sure.
Which is creepy, guys. Like, please, let's all look at this. It's really creepy.
So here's the thing. There are I think, two things.
But that's the standard. That's the golden standard.
That is the golden standard. There are two, I think, really interesting things at play with his character. It's not based specifically. I mean, I think they based it on John List, that guy who killed his whole family and just kind of like disappeared one day. It's like one of the most popular America's Most Wanted cases. Just like a real crazy son of a bitch who basically, you know, he was a loser, lost his job, lost the status, and just annihilated his whole family. It's real brutal. It's real crazy. So I think they're basing it on guys like that.
I'd rather you be dead than ashamed of me.
Exactly.
Ugh.
Those guys are everywhere.
Those are the most fucked up kills.
It's one half of true crime, and it doesn't even always have to be like, I'd rather have you dead than ashamed of me. Sometimes it's just that, ooh, I got bored of this wife, and I'm gonna kill my whole family and go off with this girl I found. You know, there's a lot of that. That
like,
happens
divorce
all
is
the time.
So much work.
Uh-huh. But I think what it's also playing into is the idea, like the stereotypical bad stepdad. Like, guys that just recognize a weakness because these women don't have husbands anymore, whether they left them or whether they died, and they just swoop in like white knights.
It's less like I want the perfect family and more like you're seeing an opportunity via a damaged spouse, somebody you can manipulate and control.
You're talking about like the other guys outside of the movie, like the
yeah.
real life guys?
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
But they come in like the best guys in the world. Like they're chummy with
some stepdads are great.
Stepdads are great.
My dad was a stepdad
yes.
to my brother, and it was great. He coached his hockey team.
I'm not saying all stepdads are bad.
I don't
bad
think he built a birdhouse.
At all.
My papa was a stepdad.
Your papa was a stepdad. The really cool thing about...
I come from a long line of stepdads.
The cool thing about your dad is that your brother's biological father and his stepfather, your
they
dad,
coached hockey together.
Together.
So weird.
What a best case scenario. Anyway.
Like, such a Canadian thing.
But there are guys that look for those women. I think that's kind of what we're playing with here. The real interesting thing about him is that he doesn't... It's not like once he gets married, he becomes a dickhead. Like,
yeah, because he is not abusive
no
up until he tries to murder them.
Up until, yeah, he like, decides that I have to get rid of
when
them.
When he bashes Susan over the head with the phone,
oh
one,
my God,
it's like such a turn, it's so good. But she is so shocked because he hasn't let the facade down
ever
once in front of
ever
her. Once at
he's
all.
You get the sense that he has started to be quiet. You know, and like there's a rift happening and they're not addressing it. And he's just like, oh, everything's fine. But it's so quiet that you wouldn't even notice it. Like, she barely notices that something's happening,
mm-hmm,
but she's just really smart. The sinister thing about him is that he always lines up another family before murdering his current family.
Yeah, so that's what turns it from like, oh, he's just, you know, out of his depth into like serial killer territory, because
yeah,
he decides at one point there's a line that is just crossed and there's no return. Like, oh, I'm not working anymore on this.
Yeah.
Too many things have happened. Danger is too close. The walls are closing in. I need to set up something else. And so he quits his job. Which they show kind of the fanfare of it, like how
uh-huh
dastardly it is to just have a secret part of your life.
Yes.
because he uses that time to take the ferry to go to another idyllic town where he finds another widow with 2.5 children.
Right.
That process is like a month or something, they said, right?
I think it was 8 months before he killed his family at the beginning of the movie. He quit his job. So it took him months to do it. He establishes himself in a community. He builds a relationship. He probably starts moving in. Like, I think that is the dividing line where he's going to pack up his bags at his house and move in with the new wife or new, you know, girlfriend or whatever. That's when he kills the family. What's great is that I don't think it's that they always discover who he is. It's just that they remind him that what he's after doesn't exist. Like the whole perfect family, the Leave It to Beaver style family.
You think he's not always running?
No, I don't think so. Like, I think that is clearly what happens at the end of this movie. Like, he gets found out, and that's why he has to just sort of like, oh, I guess we're doing this right now. Because Susan discovers that he left his job. And he
lied about it pretty good, though.
He lied about it so good.
Like, he was so quick with that lie.
That girl, that receptionist, you know, I've never gotten anybody fired, but I don't know about that girl. I'm just going to call them and fix this all up. But he drops the wrong name. And
oh, that's such a good part where he's like, who am I here?
Yeah.
It's like,
he doesn't know
give him an
who
Oscar.
He is. It's incredible. The other great thing about this movie is that it has such a weaponized use of a real receding hairline. Because throughout the whole movie, we see him with a full head of hair. And then...
at the beginning, it feels like he's just left Amityville Horror. Like, he's just axed his family, and he just, like, peels off some hair to go into a new family.
Yeah. And in the middle of this movie, when he decides to go off and start trying to find a third family, I don't know, a 100th family at this point, probably, he peels back his wig to use his real hairline. Like, he puts a mustache on, and you can see that he's balding.
He's running out of identities.
This guy would never run out of identities. There's no fucking way. He's a bottomless pit. I don't even think he knows his real name anymore, right?
Ooh, that's good.
Such an incredible character, and Terry O'Quinn just fucking nails it. You're right, that scene where he's in the basement, just screaming, ah, these fucking bastards! Like, he's having arguments from the past about, like, children, and like, you gotta tell that boy, we gotta get him under control. It's like, who the fuck are you yelling at, man? He is just exploding, and he doesn't realize that his daughter's in the basement seeing it all happen.
I think it's also just like an embodiment of his fears that everything doesn't go right. Like, it's kind of like a hologram of everything that's ever gone wrong, and just thinking that things can go wrong is something that ruins the facade.
Ooh. I always just assume that it's once he realizes that human beings are messy and complicated, that's where it goes. Because with this relationship, the current relationship that we're following with the movie, it's once...
You know, I've never really, really known what Thanksgiving is about.
Until now, yeah. Or when she asks about his past, he's like, you know, honestly... it's like I didn't even exist before I met you, which, you know, when you know that he didn't, is great, but also just like, what a bullshit line. How long can you get away with that? Like, you at some point, you got to tell her stories from your childhood.
And all of his friends are people he sold houses to. You're just like,
right? This is why you can't trust somebody who's got no people, who's got no path. Somebody just rolls into town with a briefcase and a trench coat.
Men.
Like, don't trust them. But the reason that I think this family falls apart is because the reason this family falls apart
is because he's not got a large enough radius. He's playing in the same sandbox. He needs to move states, not locales.
Before he gets discovered, it's because Stephanie is growing up and Stephanie is dating now. And it's not this perfect,
and she's
beautiful,
also got good
angel
stepdad
child.
Dar.
Well, yeah, there's that. But
she's like, you have given me the ick.
But that gets smoothed over. Like, he does it. He does murder
sort
her
of.
Therapist. But but they start to reconcile. And he's like, man, this is where Thanksgiving happens, right? And he's like, it's all perfect. It's all coming together again. It isn't until she starts dating and starts becoming like her own person that everything falls apart. You know? Because he has a freak out. And like, there's no coming back from that. And also, he just knows that he's losing control of the family. Like, I bet if she was 8, maybe it could last until 16. Like, but once they're teenagers, I think that's really where it comes down. I think it's at some point he's just like, I fucking hate these kids. Teenagers are the worst. I can't deal with it. Better murder them all.
I mean, he handles her getting expelled pretty okay.
Yeah, was surprising, right?
But like, he was still trying to get in. Like, he was still
that's true.
Like trying to get his foot in the door with her.
Yeah, he hadn't quite fixed that, made that relationship yet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know much about the director?
I do not.
Okay, because he directed maybe, like, if Momcore had a Mount Rushmore, he's got a movie that's the first one they chisel into that rock. It's Juliet Roberts' face. It's Sleeping with the Enemy.
Oh, fuck! When he organizes the cans.
Yeah, right. That has come up on this podcast a lot. I don't know why that's such a detail.
The biggest Momcore jump scare in history.
Just, Campbell's soup! He's here! But also, he
That was peak Julia Roberts' red hair perm.
Yeah. My mom loved that movie. Everybody
My mom
loved that movie.
Did too.
That movie also has a mustache cameo, right? Like a fake mustache. Because doesn't she get dressed up to go visit her mom? She like pretends to be some guy.
Oh yeah, and she's like in a senior's home, and he was like visiting her and being creepy.
Yeah, Joseph Rubin, I think that's the guy's name. Yeah, he just loves.
He just looks like a bad dude.
Well, that's the director is Joseph Rubin.
Oh,
I'm sure he's a lovely man.
Sorry, Joseph. I meant the actor.
I'm just saying he likes a disguise. But yeah, he also directed The Good Son. We watched a trailer for a movie that he directed last night called The Forgotten, which is...
Oh, he directed that?
Yeah. He had that Julianna Moore movie where it's like you just...
Don't spoil it.
I'm not spoiling anything. But just like you wake up one day and all of a sudden it's like your child never existed. And then suddenly your marriage never existed. It's a... I cannot say that it's a good movie.
It's not a good movie.
Even in 2004.
But spoil it would be to ruin 2 hours of your life if you wanted to watch it.
You gotta check it out. It's crazy. I mean, I haven't seen it since 2004. I rented it on VHS as a kid. But even as a kid, I was like, I don't know about this one.
So this movie, the one we're talking about right now, The Stepfather.
Yeah, okay.
Did it have a theatrical release? Or
absolutely.
Was it okay, so it wasn't a made-for-TV movie.
No, but it does feel very made-for-TV.
Yeah, it's apart from that dead family in the beginning... Everything else could be made for TV.
I wonder if that is part of the vibe of the movie, though, because it is supposed to be average American everyday home. Like, it is sweaters and big smiles. There's nothing more sweaters and big smiles than made for TV movies. Like, I wonder if that is just a quality that they were actually going for.
Mm.
Like, let's make this look idyllic and momcore, I guess, you know, is the way to do it.
My favorite thing about the movie, apart from Jerry just stealing the show.
Goddamn.
So there's this like cat and mouse going kind of on and off the whole movie.
Yeah.
So
this is your favorite part?
my favorite in an ironic way, John.
Okay, got it.
The brother of the wife, like in his previous family.
Yeah.
He is like hot on his tail. In the most like leaps and bounds of ways. Like somebody tells him to get a gun, so he just gets a gun.
Uh-huh.
And then in terms of like narrowing down where Jerry has gone, where Jerry is, he just looks at a magazine of like top 10 towns for families. And I feel like he arbitrarily picks one.
Surely there's a scene that gets cut out, but absolutely.
And he's like, here we go. And then he starts looking at like all of the widows in the last, 2 years that have gotten remarried.
Yes.
It's just this crazy, crazy chase, and he does it the entire film.
Mm-hmm.
He is chasing him down.
Okay, well,
you're
right. When you think of it this way, this is pretty great.
We are setting up for a big showdown.
Yeah.
Like he is coming to reveal everything.
He's sleeping in his car. He's wearing the same clothes for a month. He's got to get revenge for his sister.
But shit falls apart all on its own. Like we don't need a third party to come in and be like, this guy's a murderer.
Yeah,
like he ruins it himself.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the brother shows up for the final showdown, he gets shot right away with his own gun.
Yeah.
No, sorry, he gets stabbed.
He gets stabbed. He bursts into the house. Jerry has basically just decided he's going to kill the family. He's locked mom up in the basement. The daughter is home but doesn't necessarily realize what's happening yet. And yeah, he lasts 8 seconds.
8 seconds.
Like, I'm going in there. I'm going to fucking stop this guy. Oh, no.
We watched him the whole movie.
Yeah.
Just for him to die in the foyer.
Yeah.
My favorite part, though, is at the end, like, after mom and daughter have had the showdown with the stepdad, there's a corpse of a guy they have no idea who it is in the front of their house.
And who came with a gun.
Yeah, the gun that saved their lives, basically. Yeah.
Nobody's like, who's this fucking guy? Yeah, their only order of business is just like, I'm cutting down that fucking birdhouse you put up. This house is clean again. Here we go. At least he got me a cute dog, which didn't get killed in the movie.
Yeah, thank God.
Man, that was...
That was, oh, I don't
that was
like
tense
that.
For a minute,
I did
right?
not like that.
Not enough good can be said about Terry O'Quinn's performance of this movie. Like, I could talk for another 20 minutes about how good he is. Every scene he's in is great. It's also just like, you almost fall for how good of a guy he is, but all the time you know you can't trust him whatsoever. He's got that it quality. Like, even when he's not the bad guy.
I told you he's got it.
He's got it. I mean, he's the dad in Pin, who's kind of a monster in an interesting way.
That's another good one.
But you can't. We watched that with a
and another
club,
watch
too.
Party.
That
movie.
Totally fucks some people up. Yeah, he makes some really interesting choices. He was the cop in the Amityville movie that we covered not long ago, the one with the evil mirror.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. He was the best part of that movie, too. Like, basically, if you want to punch up your script, hire Terry O'Quinn and he will do it for you. Every scene he's in is fantastic. He's great. One thing I will say, because we have not mentioned her a whole lot, is that Stephanie, the daughter, they give her a lot of screen time. Like, you would think the movie is about her. And maybe originally she was the focus.
Yeah, like, because we follow her to school. We see a bit of her dating life.
Yeah. We see her in a weird, almost weird relationship with her therapist where it's like her best friend.
I forgot about the therapist stuff.
There's just like a tension between them that I don't like. Also, she has a shower sequence at the end of the movie, which is really
inappropriate.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, because we are treating this family like she's a child. Like,
yeah.
I know she's 16.
She's like 16.
I know she's 16, but like, just the framing of the entire thing, like, it's about a family unit and a dad, and mm-hmm. he's not quite fitting in and stuff. And then.
And she's coming of age.
And they go ahead and just like do a full nude shot. It's
right?
Just like.
Like, it's the end of the movie. Like, oh, we really quickly got to get a shower sequence in here. Like, it was a mistake.
Maybe mom would have been more appropriate.
Yeah.
Like, if you have to have a titty, have an adult one.
Exactly. Oh, man, it's such a crazy choice. Yeah, her and the therapist were a little weird. Like, at some point, you almost
And you're not supposed to get that vibe. Like,
no, I don't think
to be
so.
Like,
he's
oh, she's
to be...
got a father figure. Like,
that's exactly what it actually
is. He cares for her.
Yeah.
It's not a quid pro quo or anything. Like, I guess it kind of is because she's paying him.
But... Yeah. And yeah, she's, like, genuinely affected when he dies. And she does some detective work because she doesn't quite trust stepdad. And, you know, she finds evidence that leads her to the rental home or the home that they're showing.
She is really good at sleuthing out. Like,
oh, my God.
She would have caught him right away in the beginning of the movie if he hadn't have intercepted that package to the newsletter.
Yeah, because...
Or to the newspaper.
Yeah, the brother from the first marriage of the movie who is doing the hunting of the stepfather and dies within seconds of confronting him, convinces the newspaper to run another story. And his goal was to put the photo of the missing stepfather in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And they release the article without a photo, so it doesn't really do a good job. But Stephanie reaches out to the newspaper and asks for a photo because she just suspects that there's something up with him.
Yeah,
she's
this
really...
family died a year ago. He showed up in our lives a year ago.
Yeah, it all fits.
It's a huge stretch, but you
sure.
know, and you got that feeling.
But they sent her the photo.
Yeah.
That it could have all been done and over right then. But yeah, he intercepted the package, swapped it out with a different
That's
photo.
That's what makes him such a smart, good killer.
That he didn't just get rid of that?
That he didn't just throw it out, burn it, whatever.
Yeah, because she would have asked for another one.
Yeah, like he knew she was waiting for it. Uh-huh. So he like doctored a photo of somebody that looked very similar to him, but was not him.
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Incredible stuff. He is such a good serial killer. I think one of my favorite serial killers in a fictional form, like a Hannibal Lecter, because there's just so much going on in his head. And it's not like we have this big monologue where he explains what his childhood was like.
Yeah, we don't know anything about him.
Nothing at all. Even two movies later, we don't know anything about him. We haven't seen the third one, but Terry O'Quinn's not in it, so we're probably not watching it anytime soon. But yeah, we know he is just a shell. He is an idea of a person, and those make for some of the best serial killers.
Yeah, I'm sure there's something to parse in here about like nature versus nurture, and whether he's trying to force nurture, but nature, like he's wrong innately. You know what I mean? Like he was born a killer, and you can't nurture being like a good human being.
I like that.
And that's why he's obsessed with like the family unit and having a perfect family. There's something there. Surely there's something there.
I think you're on this. I think you've earned your elbow patches, Kim. Here's your smoking pipe and your degree. You can put it on the wall.
Because the fact that we don't know anything about him and he is a chameleon, but he's also so obsessed with the perfect family. So much so that he allows a lot of photos to be taken of him. And if I were a murderer who was only like four towns over from my previous crime scene, I would not let anyone take a photo of me.
Right? He is a ferry ride away from being discovered.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And I feel like it's probably the same ferry every time.
I think so. Yeah. He's just hopping from the mainland to the island back and forth.
Yeah.
Man, the balls on this guy.
If you had to guess, if you even wanted to, because they kind of insinuate that the incident we saw at the beginning of the movie is not the first time he's done this.
No. He's too good at this for this to be the second time.
I don't know if he's too good at it, but it's too easy for him.
Yeah, it's too familiar.
How do you think he started? Like, do you think he had a bad childhood and he had a broken family? Or do you think that he was just born bad?
I don't know.
Or like, do you care to think about it?
I don't really. But I mean, the conversation that he has with the therapist who's pretending to be...
He doesn't like him prying.
No. So that's the thing. It's like, it's hard to tell whether or not he is just immediately upset that this guy is digging or if he actually strikes a nerve, because there is kind of a moment where you
I think he's also a rival. He's a father figure in her life.
While they're talking, he's definitely digging, and like you could take away the idea that maybe he's being reminded of having a bad father.
I just think he doesn't like to go into any, like, he doesn't like to remove the facade.
Yeah, I would like to believe that he just had a normal ass childhood, and it's just that it maybe for whatever reason it wasn't perfect. Like, maybe it was totally normal, but it wasn't like what he saw on TV or what he always dreamed families would be like. Like, he doesn't necessarily have to come from an abusive family
like,
or an alcoholic
Bill Murray
family.
And Scrooge, where he just gets obsessed with like the world of the TV.
Yeah. And I think he has probably always been the way he is in this movie.
Mm.
Like, once he became an adult, and maybe it was a surprise to him that he killed his first family, but I don't think he ever tried to start his own family. I think he always tried to just have a perfect family.
Yeah.
Acquire
I think
one.
In my head, he's a foster kid, and he's always been dropped into families and never quite belonged.
Yeah.
And I think when he became an adult, he wanted more control over the family he was dropped into.
That works. Yeah, that totally works.
I don't know.
Checks out.
But also, I don't care to think about it. I like that he just is like this this new person every iteration of himself.
I do like your sort of reverse analysis of the cuckoo bird, though. I think that's pretty. There's got to be a bird that kind of does that. Yeah, you know, it just comes like, fuck it, this is my nest now. Because like one of my favorite details, it's such a small, silly thing that you don't really notice, is that the very beginning of the movie, like the establishing shots of the house where he has murdered his first family, is in an idyllic neighborhood, and it's a nice looking house, but it needs work. Like, it's just tiny little things like, oh, the siding's really coming apart over here, and this is a little droopy. Like, it just needs a handyman to put some effort in. And that is 100% what he notices. Like, ooh, there isn't a man in this house to take care of it, is my guess. Like, I bet he could walk up and down a neighborhood and be like, I bet this is a single mother over here. And then just, like, happen to walk by while she's bringing in the groceries, ask her if she wants a hand, needs a hand, and then figure out whether or not there is a man in the picture.
Oh, that's so creepy.
Yeah, but that's exactly what he does when he moves in with the potential new family at the end of the movie.
She's like picking up her own leaves or whatever, and she looks really tired about it.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, oh yeah, just you and the kids, eh?
and he's already rented the house next door, so surely he's scoped her out.
Absolutely, he has scoped her out.
Why would you rent a house next to a mark before you know they're your mark?
Yeah, he's just creating this like, oh man, it was just serendipitous. I moved next door, we hit it off, and here we are. Never been happier. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Thanks for teaching me the true meaning of family.
Oh man.
Yeah, he's a great character. He's so fucking evil.
And it's too that he lies, and it's not just to the family. Like, he lies to create this character. Like, when he walks into that new life, he goes right up to an insurance agency and talks himself into a job.
Oh, yeah.
And he is so, like, suave about it. He is so quick on his feet. And it just scares me that this character that I have seen all of them, all of their dark sides, and I'm still like, I would buy this.
Well, especially before the internet existed, absolutely.
I would buy all of this.
That's how these guys got away with
that, like, oh, the stupid receptionist, da-da-da-da-da. I'd be like, she's so dumb.
That's what people used to love and fear about, like, the 70s and 80s. Like, you could literally just move a couple towns over and be in another world, you know?
But I came out away from this movie feeling bad about myself. I was just like, oh, fuck, am I gullible?
Oh. Hey, we all want to believe the best in people.
Oh, shit.
Gotta keep that radar on. Gotta keep that stepfather radar on.
Yeah, I gotta be asking for photos and newspaper clippings of everybody I meet.
It's not hard to do now. If somebody's like, oh, I don't have Facebook or Instagram.
Instead of like meeting somebody on the internet and being like, you should come up to our house.
No, we've definitely never done that.
Come stay with us.
It has always worked out totally fine.
Yeah, we live in the woods. We could be the murderers, so it's like...
There's also that. I thought you were going to say, we live in the woods, we're fine. I'm like, what, where no one can hear us scream?
It's a fair trade. Everyone's taking a risk.
Everybody needs a little bit of danger on both sides of the equation for trust.
Yeah, that was such a fun watch. I am so surprised, though, that it's not a made-for-TV movie, because it even has that, like, made-for-TV length about it. Like, I don't really have anything else to say about the movie. Like, Terry O'Quinn's fucking great. Mm-hmm. The beginning is cool. That guy that saved the day did not. And that's it.
Yeah. 89 minutes, this movie.
Efficiency.
Gotta love it.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's a character movie. Like, how much can you do here?
No, I mean, you could have done more. Modern movies would have done more, and more would have been worse. Anyway, we really like this movie. You see this movie recommended all the time. It's sort of like a hidden gem pick. If you haven't seen The Stepfather before, we highly encourage you to, even if you think you hate made-for-TV movies. And, of course, it has some connective tissue with the rest of the movies we've been talking about on this season. You've still got a couple chances left to submit your guess for this season's secret theme.
But there's a good spread.
I feel like there is a really good spread.
If you zoom out and look at them, you might be able to guess it by
now. Yeah, like you've got the opportunity now to look at most of the entire season. We've only got a couple episodes left. And don't worry if somebody else has already guessed it ahead of you, because everybody else who has guessed the theme correctly will be put into a random draw. The first person who guesses correctly is going to win a cool little prize pack, and everybody else is going to be put into a random draw for a runner-up prize. You can find links to submit your guess, your prediction, in the episode description wherever you're listening to this podcast.
If you want even more Nightmare on Film Street, consider joining us on Patreon in our Fiend Club for bonus episodes, watch parties, and more fun stuff. That is at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
We'll be back again next week with one of our final, actually our final hint at this year's secret theme, because obviously we're going to reveal the theme in the last episode. You can't really use that movie to predict. Also, that last movie is going to really give away what the secret theme is. I guarantee it. But either way, we will be back again soon. Until next time, I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive. But we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.